Mirror, mirror on the wall, I'm num num hungry for this guy's balls.
This is the Extra Hot Grade Podcast, episode 11 for the week of November 4th, 2013. I am Digital Short David T. Cole, and I'm here with Bar Mitzvah Boy Joe Reed.
Don't tell my parents I said that.
Miller Era Weekend Update Sarah Bunting.
That's the news, and Joe is out of here.
And one a-hole Tara Ariano.
Babe.
Nice.
Welcome, everybody, to the Joe Apocalypse.
It's true.
Followed by four minis, but never mind that.
Yeah, never mind that. This is the real, this is it. Yeah, this is my last show as a regular, and so because I am a giant topic bully, I decided to bring things back to one of my favorite standbys, Saturday Night Live, as you heard in the intro clip that was Cecily Strong from one of the sketches from this week's show, which this was the Kerry Washington hosted show. I think we're coming at SNL now on the heels of two really good episodes, in my opinion, two sort of uncommonly strong ones. And there's a sense to me that this cast is starting to come together, which is good. This cast that had a big turnover in the offseason with Bill Hader and Sudeikis and Armisen leaving, and the army of white men who took their place, which sort of came under the microscope, especially this week with the Kerry Washington hosting. So I guess we'll bounce it around. I guess we should probably start with the actual no black women in the cast issue, since that became such a thing in the cold open this week with Kerry Washington being asked to cycle through Michelle Obama and Oprah and Beyonce off screen, because there are no black women in the cast. And the show actually ran a scroll that comedically, but sort of still made the implicit thing that, like, we know we're on it.
Yeah.
I guess that was...
I think it's a we know. I'm not so sure they're on it.
They're not going to be on it.
Well, but the thing did say we look forward to rectifying this in the near future. So whether that was just sort of placating or whether that was an implicit pledge to do something about it is up to interpretation, I suppose.
Right.
But
when your show's been on for almost 40 seasons, the near future can mean a lot of things. That's all
yes.
I'll say.
Yes, yeah. Definitely true.
Well, there's a infinite number of feature player spots they can always fill, so it's not hard for them to go ahead and
Well, that's the
acquiesce.
Thing. It's not like there is a limit, yeah. Which is interesting because you like the way they treated the casting in the offseason, it was very much like, well, we lost three white guys, like, or three... I guess Fred Armisen is a, I don't know. That's a weird conversational road to go down. It's fine.
What is Fred Armisen anyway?
No, well, it was God, an issue right. when he was playing Obama because he got asked, like, what is your background? And he would say, like, I'm Japanese and German and 80 other things.
Right, yeah. But that they sort of took that as a mandate to fill those slots with as many white guys as they could to see. I mean, I sort of get the thing where you cast a whole bunch of new people and you see who works out, and then you sort of maybe trim it down later and you lose your Paul Brittons or you lose your, I guess, Casey Wilson's, although that's not a great argument for in the show's favor. But like the fact that Kerry Washington did such a great job, I thought, on the show this week.
Yeah,
she was really fun.
Yeah.
Played a really interesting and wide range of characters. Like, I think early on I was kind of nervous when they had her play that sort of gum-snapping, leopard print-wearing assistant or whatever.
I'd found that quite uncomfortable to watch. I couldn't get through that whole sketch.
But I thought,
like,
she was...
This is a weird transition to... And also that sketch is just... Whatever. I'm the SNL naysayer in the group, and I just didn't think it was funny anyway.
That
was a weird...
It spoke to her range, but that skit was kind of not funny either.
I thought it was very funny. Yeah, I don't know. No, I thought I laughed quite a bit. But I thought that throughout the show, she played a fairly diverse range in terms of, like, comedy types, which I thought was good. She was in the How's He Doing sketch with about Obama, where she played the sort of intellectual buttoned-up type. And whatever the Afro clown wig teacher she was wearing in the Booker T. Washington High one was, like, surprisingly really, really, like, funny in her just sort of, like, carrying off weird lines.
Know your history!
Yeah. You turned a hose on a black lady. Know your history. It was
great.
Yeah,
she had a lot of little throwaway moments like the how's he doing thing that I thought were good, that it's like a little more nuanced than you're used to seeing on SNL. So I thought that was good. But, you know, it's also like, as far as the getting out in front of the no African-American comedians issue, I think they did the only thing they could do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was also just kind of like, I could just feel this undertone of like, we're going to do this and we're going to acknowledge it. And then we're not really going to do anything about it because we don't have to. And they won't. So, I mean, that's my prediction is that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like they're at the point where they do have to. And my worry is that they will. And it's going to be a lot of like microscope attention on
how would you like to be that person?
That's going
to
be unfortunate. Yeah.
Quota conversations that are also going
to
be.
Which is why you don't let this thing get to this point to begin with.
Yeah.
What if we had one of those virtual comedians like Soledad O'Brien had to work with on the news about 7 years ago?
The hologram?
Yeah. Well, not even. It was just like they pulled out the VIC-20 and they did mocap, live mocap with somebody. And really, it happened. It was on like whatever G4 used to be or Tech TV, I think, was the...
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
Well, once they address the black woman problem, then they can look at hiring an Asian person for the first time ever.
Right, exactly. Hey, let's slow down here. Let's not go too fast into modernity.
You know, I was watching this episode and throughout this episode and... I thought this was stronger than most. I'm sort of like Saturday Night Live is okay. I'm at the point with Saturday Night Live, which I'm fine missing it. And then somebody will tell me there's a really good skit on it and I'll watch it.
It's a good show to watch piecemeal
the next day. And usually there's like one or two skits that make me smile, but it's rare that it actually makes me laugh as opposed to like Key and Peele now, which is like, like it's hard to watch Saturday Night Live for me now because Key and Peele is showing me how good sketch comedy can be.
And
these
Kroll
days.
Show.
Yeah, Kroll Show is pretty good too. And Birthday Boys has its moments too.
It's ramping up in a good way.
Yeah. Saturday Night Live is sort of like the weaknesses of their format are in stark relief when you put it next to something where they can take their time with a skit and build it. And in the era where things weren't instantaneous, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, into the 90s where the internet wasn't the power it is and live TV had more of a cachet, more of a sort of a rebel
you know,
thing going for it. You had points on your side, but now I don't think that's as much the case. And it's sort of working in their detriment because I think, you know, they have to build, you know, whatever it is, 60 minutes of comedy content for an episode probably or so. Mm-hmm. In 4 days or however quick they write it, 3-4 days, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hit miss ratio is.
Well, that's why you see like in the latest episode, the ones that are not particularly topical are funnier. Like the one with the cartoon catchphrases was, I thought, the best sketch of the night.
And I died at that. I thought that was so good. And Adi Bryant was like an all-star in this entire episode, I thought.
But
I really think she's breaking through this season, and that's exciting to see.
And they used to be able to get away with doing a story that was 6 days old or 9 days old, depending on how the news cycle went. But
you can't.
They tried to do those, and it's just like, oh yeah, that was like what, 2 years ago now? Like, you know what I mean? It seems so old by the time they get around to it.
Yeah.
And even when they come back from break, they're like, oh my god, we missed this story. Let's do a sketch on it. Like, don't just let it go.
The Daily Show already did it 2 months ago.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see how Saturday Night Live's strengths historically are not working in their favor in the digital age. It's an interesting conundrum for them.
Sort of like the musical guests too. That it's
fast forward material.
Yeah, I mean, the minute MTV bowed in 1981, that kind of became a. Now it's just like, how weirdly are they going to pair things?
Yeah,
together.
Yeah.
Like how bizarre is the pairing of acting guest and musical guest going to be?
Right.
And usually
every
the
once
ones
in a while,
that
they'll pull a. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and just speaking to like, you know, how they're. The formula may have to change is like the most viral stuff that they produced in the last 5 years have been their digital shorts. And, you know, last episode with the song parody, right? That's what it was.
Yes.
I didn't
that's
know.
An internet thing. It's for young people.
That's a total
I was going to say it's for people younger than I.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like,
I was aware it was a thing, but I never watched it.
I'm too old for this.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that was, you know, that's the thing that's getting shared today. I saw on all my feeds, and
right,
you know, that's the one thing that doesn't speak to their, you know, their mandate, you know, what they do, what they're known for, right? For live, about live TV. And I think they're going
to
be doing
more
and
more. It's just buying them time to change clothes, pretty much. Yeah.
But I do feel like, at least for me, that kind of raggedness and that kind of breakneck pace and the thing where they're just sort of like throwing like 90-minute shows worth of sketches at the wall and not all of them are going to work, I feel like that is at least something. Like, there are more polished shows, and those are great, and those are doing really well. And SNL isn't a polished show, and I feel like probably never has been. And I like the fact that there are chances to... One of the things I like about recapping the show is that I'm forced to watch the entire thing all at once, and I can see maybe one or two sketches that are just really weird or really bizarre, and maybe not everybody's going to catch on to them, but like if it like works for me and my little particular niche of sense of humor, like that's fine. And I think, I don't know, it makes the whole thing seem almost like a project that's about itself, where SNL is about SNL and the experience of watching it and the experience of watching people try and make it work for themselves. And
it's fun from a processy standpoint.
It is.
That's what you're talking about, that like, I don't particularly enjoy the show qua the show, and I almost never watch it.
Yeah.
But when I was in high school, it was, you know, standard operating procedure. And like, it was me and all my like church friends who would be quoting it to each other. Cause it was like 8 hours later, there we are lined up singing the doxology and quoting the church lady. Hi, I'm old. But even then, like if you watched it every week, you got a sense of the rhythms of it, and you could see sometimes where the seams were coming apart, or like a very late in the show sketch that like only you were still up. And then it was like you had a secret, you and everyone else, mm-hmm, who was up that late watching it. And that was kind of an early internet-esque experience of this like niche.
The Clubhouse
sense of
TV
community and watching it. But at the, I mean, I think it's worthwhile to keep doing it because it's sui generis and it's the only thing that's like itself.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, it's such an institution. Necessary.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's also fun for me as a writer to just watch and be like, oh, I know what happened there. I see why they did this. And even if I don't particularly enjoy it, I think it's definitely instructive and, you know.
And it's interesting to me to see which hosts are able to do well with it. And it's not always who you think. Like, I really expected Edward Norton to kind of bomb last week, and I thought he did a very good job. And Kerry Washington's an actress who has been good in things, but doesn't really have a comedy reputation. And watching how good she did last night, how well she did last night, how good she did. I should be ashamed of myself.
It also wasn't last night, but let's move on.
Oh, God.
Can we, let's move on to...
You're firing me at just the right time.
Let's move on to that maternity schmata she was wearing for the monologue. Who'd she borrow that from? Marty McFly's mom?
Yeah, and then in the goodbyes, too. It was a really weird kind of outfit. I don't understand.
I mean, I kind of respect that she's just wearing the most pee in the pot-ish tunic. And she's like, hi. Like, really?
She had She was on Fallon on Thursday, and she also was wearing something like very weird separates on that too, where it was like a very tenty top and matching extremely stiff skirt. I don't, whatever.
So she must have, like, they must have leaked the news just as she was like, okay, belly band is not even working anymore.
We're
going full tent.
They got her a couple of peplums that hit it in the game show sketch, you couldn't really tell, and in the Miss Universe sketch too. But
that was another good one, too, that it was just sort of like, I kind of like the show best when it just sort of sets up a premise and then lets that premise be an excuse for one liner after one liner after one liner. I thought you got that in the MTV dating sketch show, too, where just like, we're going to go down the line and you're just going to say some weird ass shit about yourselves. And
yeah,
I thought that worked.
But the problem with, well, like, you know, with that, where they are just throwing stuff to the wall, and you have a lot of voices in the writer's room, and they're very different, and you know, the sketches go up and down. For me, at the end of the night, I don't want to sit through 90 minutes of my time for the 15 minutes of stuff that I'm actually going to smile at. And that's sort of the equation at the end of it. And to speak to the difference between a show like this and like the shows that have the luxury of time and, you know, off, you know, not live production, at the end of the, like, I get it, but I'm perfectly happy with the internet telling me what to watch Monday or Sunday or whatever. And that's sort of its problem that it's going to be like that for.
And yet in the election years when they would do the when they would have weekend updates, like a special half hour one on Thursdays, I loved that because those were super topical too. But they're also, it was only a half hour. It would have like one or maybe two sketches, and then the rest would just be like set up punchline jokes in update. Like, that's kind of enough for me. Like, if that's going to be.
That's always been my favorite part of the show. I didn't love this most recent one. I felt like, first of all, the lighting was weird. Like, could someone powder Seth Meyers? He's the head writer. A little respect for the guy. And Cecily Strong, is she the. I'm not about her so much.
She's new. This is only like her fifth time doing it, to be fair.
Well, and I would say, again, I really am turning out to be the apologist on this episode, aren't I? But that for someone just starting out, I remember when Amy Poehler started out, and like people forget what a rough going she had.
Yeah, that's true. She was not that great right at the beginning.
She really struggled for a good bit.
They're actually all terrible when they start.
Yeah,
they're all terrible.
It's a tough transition.
Now and then someone drops an F-bomb and gets out of having to deal with it ever again. R.I.P. Charles Rocket. But it's and I think that actually wasn't.
I think that's apocryphal,
No, I think he just wasn't on the... He was the Weekend Update anchor, but it was during a sketch.
Oh, right.
It's like live mic or something.
But
anyway.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they always start out a little rocky. But, you know, and you remember the ones from your youth.
Yes.
More fondly, like it was more seamless. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, Hans and Franz were usually not funny. Like, right. This is what I came up on is like Carvey and...
Well, right. Yeah. And the good shows always sort of rise to the top.
And they would put, I mean, Hartman was just there for the team, and they would put him in this shit at 12:20 that he's just like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
I have kids and a mortgage. Help me.
Yeah.
It is
that's the
it is,
thing.
Though.
Like you only remember the sketches that were good because only the good ones make it into like the compilations that you see over and over and over again.
Right. Right.
And then everything else sort of falls away. You never remember it.
Right.
It's very disposable.
Speaking of disposable.
Nice.
I don't know if we're going to get the segue music. We shouldn't, because this is a terrible, awkward segue that's made of blocks. But anyway, I actually find that's charming about our next topic, The Carrie Diaries.
Yeah.
That it's kind of a very light, fizzy thing. You don't have to take it too seriously. You know, they're very concerned with their various hookups and breakups, and there was a whole like mini subplot this week about how to load the dishwasher correctly, which is kind of what I love about this show, that it's like, we've been saving this one for a while. The bowls go on the top. And I'm like, they totally do not go on the top. The top is for glasses only. But I'm still thinking about this, and it aired on Friday.
Yeah.
Have you guys been watching The Carrie Diaries? And if so, why is it so good when it really shouldn't be?
I have watched it from the start. I've never missed an episode. I think putting so much focus on relationships and being bad at relationships is charming when it's in a high school setting. I think that's really the key. Because young Carrie is not really that different from old Carrie. Actually, that's not true. She's a much better friend. She's a nicer person. Yeah. She seems smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also
seems like she'd be a better writer based on what
or at least less proud of the ways in which she's an asshole.
Yes.
I feel like that was always one of my biggest problems with Carrie Bradshaw and Sex and the City. It was just like, you can be a mess. Just like, don't be so goddamn proud of yourself for it. Like,
yeah, Maggie is way more the Carrie of the Carrie Diaries than Carrie is, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, like she's the one who keeps fucking up and being still sort of endearing. But it's so much fun. It's so cute. Everyone on it is adorable. Their problems are
so, really managed
so
to, like,
small.
And they take the fashions they want and leave everything else out. That they're like, this is the Delia's catalog version of this fashion, which I'm totally fine with. Because everyone looks totally cute.
Yeah.
Love it.
No, this was my first episode, this past week's episode that I watched. And I'm intrigued. Was the first season a full season network sized?
I think it was 13 episodes.
I can catch up pretty quickly.
It started it started in January, I think.
Yeah.
And it is commercial-rific, like, even by today's standards. I think there's, like, 36 minutes of things that are happening.
Soap opera, actual daytime soap opera length. Nice.
Exactly.
I thought it was, I also found it very charming. I like the fact that they're not overly concerned with, like, there are obviously, like, nods and setups for these characters when they get to Sex and the City, but you don't need to, they're not slavish in terms of just, like, we need to eventually age this thing up so that it'll match up perfectly with Sex and the City. Like, no, they don't seem like they're concerned with that at all.
I mean, I hope that the teen audience that's watching it has not watched Sex and the City, because that's not appropriate.
Right, exactly.
They should do like a Leonard Nimoy comes in on a spaceship for Star Trek, like, and split the timelines, and that way they can have Carrie Diaries CW, like, be its own adult show and, like, have, you know, that progression.
Yeah, I still have that, like, infuriating TV nerd part of my brain, though, where I'm watching it. It's like, and I watched Sex and the City. I was very kind of ambivalent about it. There were things that I liked. There were things that I didn't. It was never that big of a deal. But even still, watching this show and having that little TV nerd part being like, the woman who's dating her father was the woman who made a face at Carrie in the ladies' room because she started dating Aiden after Carrie broke up with him. And I was just like, that violates the timeline. It's like, who the fuck cares? Like, honestly.
I totally forgot about that, and now I'm going to be... I mean, I was more concerned that she was like the pimp... cop on from SVU a couple weeks ago. It was like totally like rape abetting. And
yep.
Ugh.
Oh God.
What are you doing?
Well, the one girl is Rosie Larson, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. From
Maggie is Rosie Larson,
as seen in the Killing ad campaign.
Yep.
But yeah, I thought it was good. The woman who they've got playing young Samantha is way more charming than actual Samantha.
She's so good. Her name is.
I liked her a lot.
Her name is Lindsay Gort. My daughter's name is also Gort, and she's so good. She's like suggestive of Samantha, no pun intended, but like not. She's not doing an impression of Kim Cattrall.
Isn't Gort the robot from when the day the Earth stood still? Isn't that Gort?
I don't know.
Possibly.
Probably.
Gort was the internet email system when I first started college. I remember that when everybody was still on like old type computers. They also have managed to tap into exactly the kind of CW demographic cute guy that I will latch onto, and managed to replicate him three times for all three male roles, which I thought was very good. Like, they all look remarkably similar to each other, but that's fine. Let me stress, that's totally fine.
I think they're all named Austin. Not a chest hair in the
bunch either.
Nope. Yeah, the kid who plays Sebastian, I've seen him on a few teen shows now. He was on Life Unexpected, which I was the only one who watched it, and then went on to Switched at Birth, and now is on this. And I've always thought that kid was kind of full of shit, so I'm hoping that they write him out soon, because I don't.
Is he the boyfriend with the car?
Yes, he's the blonde. Okay. Yeah, he's the blonde.
The gay kid's really cute and endearing, though. I like that one.
Yeah, he is. Walt.
Yeah.
Exciting update.
Yes.
Gort is a fictional humanoid robot in the 1951 film The Day the Earth Stood Still and its 2008 remake. Gort.
Look
Gort's
at
so
Dave
hot right
being
now.
Right. Gort. Very good.
Get it, Google. Yeah, it's a good show. I'm sorry that they moved it to Fridays, but I also think in, you know, this, the era of time shifting, that isn't a death sentence. Mm-hmm. The Cancellation Bear, whom we have mentioned before, seems to think it's going to be kibble by the end of the season, but I hope it's not. You know, I love the show. I think it doesn't try to be anything it's not. It's obviously affectionate about its characters, and I hope that it lasts a little longer, because I just like these characters. I love Mouse. I love that she's totally insane with the studying and competitiveness, and that her boyfriend is totally into that. And
and a character that never got addressed, a character type that never got addressed on the actual Sex and the City also. Like, they never really were friends with that type of girl.
Yeah. I mean, I guess she would be the Miranda.
Yeah.
I suppose that's probably true. I need to just take a weekend now that my weekends are about to be my own again. Maybe I'll just take a weekend and just do a like CW primer course where it's just sort of like I'll catch myself up to Carrie Diaries. I keep hearing intriguing things about Rain.
It's all right.
Mary Queen of Scots is a teen soap show that I want to at least check out.
Power watches.
I'm still watching it. It's okay. I'm seeing if it gets any better. Right now, it's like it's very exposition-y.
Yeah, and Arrow seems like exactly the kind of guilty pleasure that I should probably also at least give it a shot.
That's all you.
Because I don't watch any CW right now, and I feel like on one level that's probably appropriate as I'm an adult person now, but.
We are older than you, and we watch.
I was going to say, like, yeah, I want to.
Joe, you got to nurture that inner 14-year-old girl inside of you.
It does seem weird that you don't watch Vampire Diaries, Joe.
It's very weird that I don't watch Vampire Diaries.
It was show than Vampire Diaries for you. It's called Dracula. NBC, catch it.
Catch it while you can. It dropped 38%.
Oh no. Oh.
I knew that wasn't over. Speaking of rains. I have this. Thank you. Segue makes it smooth
as butter. Sarah Bunting, your segues have been replaced by a robot.
The one time I actually had a good one.
Oh.
I was going to say,
oh, no. Sorry.
Speaking of rain, is everyone all right?
Yes.
Should I throw this to Joe?
No, proceed.
Tim McCarver's reign as a Fox broadcaster has ended. Joe, talk about it.
Oh, God.
Before there's another sound effect.
Well, here's my deep, dark secret is with the World Series featuring both the St. Louis Cardinals and the Boston Red Sox, as much as I hate the Red Sox and want anybody to beat them at any point, I didn't really watch the World Series very much in this year because A, fucking who cares? But B, like the Tim McCarver issue, the Joe Buck and Tim McCarver issue makes it really, really difficult to watch baseball programming.
You got to loop in non-sports people on this conversation.
Well, first, Joe, you should say what your partisanship is in case people don't know.
Right.
Joe loves the Buffalo Bills.
That is the truth. As baseball teams go, I'm a Yankee fan, but the Yankees not being a Buffalo hometown team, it's always sort of like a level below where it's just like the Yankees win the World Series and it's great, but it's not the same as if a Buffalo team won. But
you're sort of from Red Sox territory too, right?
Well, I'm from bandwagon-y territory. Okay. So that basically when the Yankees were good, there were a lot of Yankees fans. And then when the Red Sox got good, there were a lot of Red Sox fans. And that really annoyed me because more than being a Yankee fan, I'm a Red Sox hater. Like I feel like that as I get older has become my baseball passion is I just want to see them lose. So this was a bummer of an offseason because the Red Sox won the World Series.
Yeah. And the Tim McCarver, who started out in the Mets booth, and I am a Mets fan who became a Yankees fan sort of thanks to an enemy territory issue and now is back to being a Mets fan, so that's my punishment. And it's gonna last a while. But McCarver started out in the Mets booth, and back in the day he was the insightful one, and he was also in there with Ralph Kiner, who could not remember anyone's name and still can't. Now it's because he's 90,000 years old.
Yeah.
McCarver used to be good, but as he went to a national level in broadcasting and started getting more and more full of himself, he got just more and more difficult to deal with. And when he and Joe Buck, who is the son of legendary St. Louis Cardinals broadcaster Jack Buck, but who appears to hate baseball and everything to do with it, and Tim McCarver, which I totally get it. When the two of them are in the booth together, Tim McCarver is now like this superannuated idiot who also can't get anyone's name right. See Brandon Arroyo or whatever it is he called, Bronson Arroyo.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say, see David T. Cole during game time. I was all ready to be all.
Dave, what are you talking about? I have no idea.
Here's how that process goes. Oh, how dare. Oh, well, yes, you have a point.
Charles Bronson, what are you guys talking about? So it's become increasingly awkward as the years have gone on. McCarver is retiring after this season, thank God. But, I mean, I love baseball in all its forms, and the end of the season, regardless of who's in the series, and it's never my team, is bittersweet for me. Sweet because it means I won't have to hear Tim McCarver anymore, and I really think this might have been part of a plan to like ease baseball fans into the dark winter of discontent by making them hate everything involved in watching baseball so much because of Tim McCarver that they'd just be relieved when it was over instead of sad.
So he's on Fox?
He was on Fox. Now he's on a golf course in Boca somewhere. Mazel. Okay.
So Joe Buck, I guess, gets like kicked up to his position. Do they know who's going to be with him?
I think Joe Buck is probably going to ask out and just be like, I just only want to be on football because I hate baseball and I have daddy issues.
Right. Yeah, that's probably true. Although it's the watching as much football as I do watch, and especially now that Time Warner Cable has made up with the NFL and is allowing us to get a channel called NFL Red Zone, which is, if anybody doesn't follow sports, and I have a feeling that's probably a good chunk of this audience.
I know what Red Zone is.
I know what Red Zone is, too.
I know. High five, Tar. Woo!
Okay. Yeah. But so Red Zone is a channel that will pull in the feeds of every single game happening at that point. And in the NFL, there's always at least like five or six games happening all at once. And we'll cut from game to game, depending on which games are most likely to feature a scoring play soon. So it is just an absolute like attention deficit tour through
love it
NFL football. But what the one of the side effects of it is, you're always getting the announcers when they're at their most hyperactive. And football announcers have a fantastic combination of being very, very enthusiastic and real dumb. Yeah. So, like, it's just, there's just a lot of, like, I'll tell you what you see right there, you guys. It's just like, and just no content, absolutely content free. It's just sort of like, that's the kind of guts you need to have a thing. And it's just like,
can we talk about also the word football in the context of football announcing and discussion? That they never say just move the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Or they have to win this game. It's like, in order to, you know, win this football game, you got to move the football down the football field.
Yeah.
And get it between the football field goal post, Bob or
everybody's
Terry or Shannon or whoever the fuck. Why is it always the full word football?
Everybody's a former high school coach, it seems.
Welcome
and it
just to NFL
seems like...
football. Got it. Yeah. The F stands for football, Shannon Sharp. Cool looking, total moron.
It just, that's football announcing seems like a school of thought where everybody has heard the previous generation do it. And it's just sort of like everybody's using the same 9 or 10 phrases, mm-hmm. just like over and over again. And there's this weird, there's always this like received wisdom about football that anytime if you sort of like advanced statistics or whatever, like coming up with like more interesting ways of watching football. And none of these people who announce it give a shit about that. It's always like these like orthodoxies that have to remain true and everything's about momentum and coaches knowing the right whatever. And it's
gutty play.
Yeah.
I think there is a cliche-otron under the desk. And if it breaks down, I'm sure there's been an Onion story on this. That like the cliche, the football halftime phrase generator broke down and it's like 35 minutes of terribly awkward silence and expensive suits in the CBS studio. And
that's not even getting into the halftime shows, which feature no less than 12 people in the studio at any given time. And there's just like, it's one of those things where you half expect to see like the guy on the unicycle juggling, like wheeling through the frame.
The guy from the old Tonight Show, like Alan Carr, not Alan Carr.
Jack Parr?
Yes, thank you. Alan Carr is Grease 2 and Can't Stop the Music. Completely different halftime show that I totally want to see now. But anyway, the Jack Parr era when they had the plates in the air and just someone's playing a squeeze box and you're like, so this is what it was before cable. Gotcha.
Bear standing up with a fez on his head in the corner. Like,
Jason Sudeikis in a tracksuit doing the running man. Shows.
That's no way to talk about Michael Strahan, Joe. Next.
Big casting announcement this week from Downton Abbey. Sarah Bunting is joining the cast. What?
Wow.
What?
Congratulations.
Not our Sarah Bunting. And not even an actor named Sarah Bunting. There's going to be a character named Sarah Bunting. No D. But it's still fun.
Shut up. What role? That's crazy.
And what role? Do we know?
Who is Sarah Bunting?
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. That's exciting. What role? Some let's see. Sarah Bunting should be...
she'll really like cricket.
I was going to say, she can be like a pioneer woman cricketer.
Yes.
Who really shows the boys how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And likes true crime.
Right.
Ooh, the true crime of the era.
She could be, or she could be like a mastermind murderer stalking the Abbey because she knows how all the crime stuff works.
This just in.
All of that works.
She is a character who appears in the fourth season of Downton Abbey.
Do we have to spoil this? Should we spoil it? Read ahead.
Okay, I don't think this is much of a
spoiler. I'm asking you, because I don't know.
If you were super spoiler sensitive, sure.
All right.
She meets Tom Branson at a political rally in Ripon.
Oh.
Wow. With sexy results.
According to this photo, she wears a hat.
Wow. Guys, I'm
suspect
sorry.
Suspect is hatful. Repeat, hatful.
That's so funny.
It's like I don't even know myself.
Oh, God. Suspect is hatful.
All All right, everybody, it's time for the canon. And this week, we let Joe have the floor as his last canon submission as a regular member. Joe, take it away.
Yes, so for my final canon presentation as a show regular, I want to right a wrong from the first incarnation of this podcast. The only time a listener ever submitted an episode of The West Wing for the canon, I had to vote no because it was the rare episode from the show's first three seasons that I actually didn't like. I believe it was called Somebody's Going to Emergency, Somebody's Going to Jail, and it was all about Sam Seaborn's daddy issues, and F that. But it's bothered me ever since because I was supposed to be the West Wing apologist on this panel, and if the listeners couldn't count on me to stick up for Aaron Sorkin's one great contribution to television, sorry, Sports Night, you haven't aged very well, then who could they count on? So the good news is that I'm presenting The West Wing, Season 1, Episode 15, titled Celestial Navigation for the Canon. The bad news is that I don't have a vote. The frame starts out with a fairly significant frame story. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Josh Lyman is the guest at some lecture series in D.C. somewhere. And while he's waiting to go on, he's fielding phone calls from Sam and Toby about some vaguely defined problem with Roberto Mendoza, who is, at this point in the show, the president's nominee for the Supreme Court. So while at the lecture series, Josh narrates the events to the crowd. Josh narrates the events of the week that led up to tonight. And it turns out, as Sam and Toby go through their part of the day, that Judge Mendoza has been pulled over in Connecticut for suspected drunk driving and jailed for refusing the breathalyzer. So while Josh is at the lecture, Sam and Toby head out to Connecticut to fix the Mendoza issue. And then they get lost and have to find their way to this small little town. And Sam's navigating by the stars because he's Sam and kind of a doof. And that's where we get the episode title. So Josh's story flashes us back 36 hours to when HUD Secretary Deborah O'Leary called a Republican congressman a racist in some committee meeting. And the White House staff has to figure out how to spin it. But before they can, Washington Post, I believe, I think they actually call him a Post reporter, Danny Kincannon, played by Timothy Busfield from 30-something.
Elliot.
Yes. Asked the president about a situation in the middle of a quick little press conference, and they realize too late that CJ, the press secretary, is not in the room. And so the president sort of has to answer the question and says that an apology from the HUD secretary would be appropriate in the situation. And of course, that opens a whole can of worms. So eventually, Deborah O'Leary, played by CCH Pounder, in I believe her only appearance on the show, and it was kind of a fairly brief and not quite so consequential appearance. She shows up, and she and Leo have a bit of a throwdown about whether she should apologize, and she doesn't want to because what she said was the truth. And Leo's like, it doesn't matter because politics. And ultimately, she agrees to make an apology, and so that seems to be handled. The White House just needs to announce this in a press briefing. But when it comes time to brief the press about this apology, there is a problem in that CJ returns from the dentist having just undergone emergency root canal.
Yeah.
What the hell happened?
I had root canal.
What happened to your cheeks?
I had root canal.
Why are you talking like that?
I had root canal.
Yeah, I heard you the first time. I was just amusing myself.
I can suggest some other things you can do with yourself.
Are you in pain?
I had root canal.
Allison Janney as CJ Craig kills it in these scenes with the cotton stuffed in her mouth from the root canal. One of the things I like about this episode is that a lot of the time Sorkin's comic relief bits serve to make the female characters look foolish. And while CJ certainly looks and sounds silly in these scenes, the major point of this little part of the story is that CJ kicks ass at her job and everybody else who would try to do it would suck at it, as we will soon see. Particularly Josh, who, true to his nature, is unbearably cocky about how he's going to handle the press corps and he's going to do fine at this and he's going to do better than CJ, in fact. And he expresses this bit of gasbaggery to Danny, who then, in return, manages to get Josh back during the press conference.
Josh, economists worry the continuing drop in unemployment will create increased pressure on wages, in effect driving them up. Is the president worried that this could lead to a resurgence of inflation?
Let me emphasize, the president is pleased that unemployment has dropped another 0.5%. As a result,
I'm sure we all join the president in his joy, but I'm wondering if the president has a plan to fight the resulting inflation.
The president will do everything in his power to maintain the robust economy that has created millions of new jobs, improved productivity, and kept a lid on inflation.
But he has no plan to address inflation specifically?
24 PhDs on the Council of Economic Advisors, Katie. They have a plan to fight inflation.
Is the reason you won't tell us about it that it's a secret?
Yeah, Danny, we have a secret inflation plan.
Secret. Josh, how long?
Yeah. So the briefing manages to somehow get worse from there before it gets better. And once Josh is done and he leaves the briefing room, all hell breaks loose in the West Wing.
Joshua!
Yeah, that's the face I wanted to see right now.
What the hell happened in there?
CJ.
You completely imploded.
What did I do?
You completely imploded.
I wouldn't say completely.
You are vague, you are hostile, you are belligerent.
Belligerent.
You know what it's going to take for me to fix this?
I'm going to fix this.
No, you're not. You are not ever allowed in my press room again.
Donna, call up Toby's office and see if he was watching.
Where the hell is he?
Never mind. Just support me on this.
No!
Thanks. Toby,
have you fallen on your head?
Listen.
Have you fallen down and hit your head on something hard?
I feel really bad about this.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, well, then I guess that's all that really matters.
Hey.
That was some very good television, Josh, and I think four network news directors will bear me out on that tonight.
I really think this isn't as bad as you're making it out to be.
A secret plan to fight inflation?
Okay, CJ, for a little while, you're going to have to write it down.
So not only did Josh fail to dispense with the O'Leary story, but now he's created a new story about a secret plan to fight inflation. Then Sam comes in with more bad news, as Judge Mendoza has managed to weigh in on the O'Leary matter despite being on vacation in Nova Scotia. Mendoza said that the president was wrong to make O'Leary apologize, and Toby, who was the point man on the Mendoza confirmation process, is fuming that this judge seems insistent on making that process as difficult as possible for him personally. The president, who's been out of town, returns to the Oval Office the next morning, where he is briefed on the rather disastrous events of the previous day.
Sam asked CJ to move the briefing to 2 o'clock so that we could fold in the teachers. CJ had emergency root canal surgery at noon and so was unable to brief.
Who did?
I did.
Oh, God.
Yeah, long story short, you're going to be reading a bit today about your secret plan to fight inflation.
I have a secret plan to fight inflation.
No.
Why am I going to be reading that I do?
It was suggested in the press room that you did.
By who?
By me.
You told the press I have a secret plan to fight inflation?
No, I did not. Let me be absolutely clear. I did not do that. Except, yes, I did that.
Josh, I'm a little confused.
Sir, there was this idiotic round robin. It was sarcastic. There's no way... They didn't know that. They were just mad at me for imposing discipline and calling them stupid.
Okay, before we go on, CJ, if blood is gushing from the head wound you just received from a stampeding herd of bison, you'll do the press briefing.
Yes, sir. Mr. President.
A secret plan to fight inflation?
There was no turning them back. I denied it for half an hour. They wouldn't take no for an answer.
Were you clear?
I was crystal clear. They said, do you think if the president has a plan to fight inflation, it's right that he keep it a secret? I said, of course not.
Are you telling me that not only did you invent a secret plan to fight inflation, but now you don't support it?
When you put it like that,
Mr. President, much as we'd love nothing more than to stand here and watch you beat the living crap out of Josh, there's actually a bigger fish to fry.
Josh Lyman, I should say, is a fairly good character on the show and one I generally enjoy, but he is also really tends to get full of himself and cocky and confident. And an episode like this that sort of allows basically all the other characters to bat him around like a pinata is very satisfying.
And nowadays... So now all I can think of is that guy Sorkin, and I'm really enjoying this moment.
Exactly. So now we're back to the current evening, where Sam and Toby have arrived at the Connecticut police station and managed to ultimately convince small-town sheriffs there that they have, in fact, imprisoned the president's nominee for the Supreme Court. And further, in a little bit of narrative double-bagging, there's no way Mendoza could have been drunk driving since he physically can't drink because blah, 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 metabolic deficiency. Mendoza is not interested in Toby pulling strings to get him out of jail, wanting instead to stick around and prove his innocence in an official court of law. Obviously, from a communication standpoint, this would be a disaster, so Toby has to convince him otherwise.
My kid was in the car, Toby. They patted me down and they handcuffed me in front of my 9-year-old boy. Then he and his mother got to see them put me in the squad car and drive away.
He's also seen you wearing a robe with a gavel in your hand.
He doesn't understand that. He doesn't know what that is. He understands what the police are because he watches television. That's what he's going to remember. His father being handcuffed. So America just got another pissed off guy with dark skin.
Robbie and Laura, where are they right now?
Motel a few miles.
There's nothing about this that doesn't stink. If it were me, I'd want to extract vengeance. And I'd say let justice be done. I'd also want to spend some time in a dark room alone so that I didn't have to face my wife and my son and have them see my humiliation. Bob, I can't get this done if this is the story. Can't get it done. Nothing about this that doesn't stink. And nothing about it that wouldn't be better if you were Supreme Court Justice.
Did Toby just say that his wife's name was Laura?
I'm not sure.
I thought he said Robbie and Laura. It's just
Oh, I think he said, Rob, I can't get this done.
No, I think where he asked, where are Robbie and Laura?
Oh, where did they go? I don't know. Anyway, I missed that.
Sorry. Battlestar Galactica. No, that's okay. Sidepark. Continue.
Edward James Olmos, by the way, as Judge Mendoza in this episode. So, after this, Mendoza agrees and they leave the police station, and everything sort of gets left semi-open-ended for the confirmation process that will continue in a different episode. So, like many of the West Wing's early season episodes, Celestial Navigation offers a satisfying mix of political wonkery, interpersonal good humor, and inspirational, if only this was how the real world worked, fantasizing. I've wrestled for a while with why I tend to find Aaron Sorkin's other shows so insufferable, while the West Wing, even in retrospect, holds up pretty well for me. I think this show was the last time that Sorkin allowed his writing to be tempered by other voices. Even back then, there were legendary stories about Sorkin's control over the writing process. But even so, the characters on the West Wing are allowed to puncture holes in each other's righteousness from time to time. Certainly this episode allows Josh Lyman just enough self-confident rope for him to hang himself with. CJ and Toby in particular have a fantastic air of over it that cuts through the more wide-eyed Sorkin stand-ins like Sam. An Aaron Sorkin show is never not going to be strident about the way he feels like the world should operate, but on a show like The West Wing, more often than not, it feels like you're being asked to participate in a version of that world rather than being force-fed a PowerPoint presentation about why he's right and you're wrong. I really, really love this episode, and now I hand it over to you.
Well, first I'll say that the things that are preposterous about this episode, and then I'll say the things I like. One is that a Supreme Court nominee who any administration would think had a chance of getting confirmed would be this strident, because there's no way that he would that anyone who would actually have a shot at the office would be like, no, I'm going to make a point about my wrongful arrest, you know?
Right.
Like, I get it. And I think having Toby say like, no, really the reason is that you're embarrassed. You were embarrassed in front of your family is fine. But like, they wouldn't continue with this guy. They would drop him after this. Like, I think even in the whatever 13 years since this has aired, gotten so much more cynical about how this would actually work. Like, he would be so buttoned down. He wouldn't probably even be allowed to go on vacation.
Right.
But anyway, the other thing is, how fucking long is Josh's speech that Toby and Sam have time to get on a plane, fly to Connecticut, get in a car, get lost, and call in multiple times while he's still on stage? Yeah. By the time they get there, they're like, it's the middle of the night. He's still on stage. Like, Connecticut and D.C., I'm not a geography buff.
Moderator is actually a CSI coroner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He might not be that good at moving a discussion along.
That's true. But yes. The whole thing unspools in the time that Josh is on stage giving this speech. And last I checked, Connecticut and D.C. are in the same time zone.
Yeah.
So barely. There's that.
I didn't realize that actor who played the moderator actually had a bum leg.
He has two.
Yeah.
He's a double amputee, I believe.
Oh.
Yeah. because I think he was in Starship Troopers with his
showing
off his stumps as a veteran of past wars.
Oh yeah,
seriously,
right now I remember that. Yeah,
along with Dean Norris, looking exactly the same. And
I'm from Buenos Aires, and I say we kill them all.
Yeah, so those things are silly, but I think this episode is a great pick, Joe, because it captures what was best about The West Wing, which is people shit talking each other in the West Wing. Uh-huh. That's what those are the things I like the most. People getting mad at each other, people hugely fucking up. It's everything you said about Josh is so true. He's such a cocky dick, and to see him get his comeuppance is hilarious. Especially in front of the actual president, who sometimes doesn't always get involved in those sorts of things. So I feel like this captures what was best about the show, both the wish fulfillment fantasy of American political life, which is the Roberto Mendoza's nomination part of the story, as well as the actual like wonky aspects of how the sausage gets made politically. That's a little bit less, you know, dreamy. So yes, excellent pick.
Dave. I do not disagree with anything anybody has said so far. I agree that this is a good episode because it has a nice mix of what made the West Wing the West Wing, you know, people talking about what they're doing, people talking about fucking up in their jobs, people talking about how America needs to change, and
while walking.
Yeah, while walking. And everybody gets a little moment. Obviously, this is, you know, kind of a seat, you know, a press corps heavy episode. And I always enjoy in movies and shows when the press is dealing with the administration. It's something very inherently boring about it in real life, but when it's dramatized or something interesting about it, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
Well, because only in drama is someone like Danny allowed to say to the president, that might be an answer to someone's questions, but it's not an answer to mine. Like,
it's
he's
wish
still
fulfillment.
The president.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's wish fulfillment. It's something you wish somebody would actually say up there.
And yeah.
So that really works for me. That said, do not disagree with anything you said, but in the end result, I think this is just like a good episode. I think it's representative. I think it's good. I would say it's like a solid B+ episode, but it doesn't really do it for me on the canon worthy level. I think there's a lot of episodes like this in The West Wing, and this is one of many good early season episodes before, you know, it kind of got up its own ass. So I would definitely watch it. I would definitely recommend it, but I don't think I would put it up on the canon pedestal. Sarah.
I'm going to start with a knit. It's more of a Sorkin knit. There's an ongoing thing. The Mendoza is on vacation because he's antiquing with his family, which is something that is mentioned with quite a bit of tone by various characters, which coming from a writer who gets all Gilbert and Sullivan all over every project he ever writes, for him
and
to
all
be,
over Gilbert and Sullivan for that matter,
impugning other characters' masculinity basically with the whole like antiquing thing is just whatever. I'm aggravated by that. I also disagree that Josh gets enough of a comeuppance. This character has aged so poorly for me.
Yeah.
I can't. I mean, when I first watched it, I was like, "You're a douche, but you're very charming." Now he's almost unwatchable for me. And I, even during the panel discussion, he's like, "Isn't it cute how I totally fucked up and but I still got to keep my job?" Like,
also sitting there with his knees like 50 feet apart in the chair, like,
I had that note.
Like, settle down, John Holmes. No one's impressed.
Take it easy.
But what was great about that pose is that it totally tied into the Billy Madison line. Do you see that guy's balls? They were weird.
And when he gets up to walk out, he's in like a Steve Harvey suit jacket. It's like halfway down to his knees. Anyway, sorry, Sarah, continue.
Because he's little. Yeah, no,
speaking
I
of aging badly.
And also his cell phone with the antenna that he pulls up every time. Tee-hee. 90s. Like there's a lot of it that's very tough to take. I always like Toby. I think that his speech at the end to Mendoza is kind of, it doesn't quite get over, but he comes a lot closer to selling it than most characters or actors would. I like when we get to see pissy Bartlett. I like when they screw up and Dad, even though Dad is 4 feet tall, Dad is pissed. Like, he does have a certain like physical gravitas that he takes on when he's mad. He's not fucking around.
Yeah. And almost too. They have that. They share that.
Yeah. And, you know, there were some good guest stars in here. I didn't think the Wu Canao thing was funny. They wouldn't have given that to a dude to do. Yeah, this, I remember really enjoying this episode the first couple of times I saw it, but it's very hard for me to go back to that like happy West Wing place before I just kept noticing how like girls always got to be stupid and someone always got to be mentioning Harvard and look how much smarter we are than real life. And it's just very hard for me to get past that. And the self-congratulation with the oboe underlining it, it's tough for me. I think this is a good episode and very representative of the show, but it kind of made me mad.
I will also add, I've heard the words secret plan to fight inflation so many times. They've lost all meaning.
Yeah.
All right. So shall we put this to an official vote? Tara?
I can't believe this is happening again, the same as last time, but I'm going to vote yes.
Okay.
And Sarah?
I hate to do this to you on the way out.
That's fine.
But I don't think...
Vote your heart.
I don't think dishonesty helps anyone.
Exactly. Exactly.
I got to ixnay it. Sorry.
That's fine.
You reap what you sow, Joe. I also say no.
Oh. I'll be back.
You Mendoza!
With a season 4 episode, you bitches.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Speaking of self-congratulation, that's what I'm looking at right now. David T. Cole and his sound cue. Oh no. We lost Dave.
It's time for winner and loser of the week. And Tara, I think you have our winner.
I do. Winner of the week is PBS. Which has just locked up the rights to the British sitcom Vicious. If you're not familiar, Vicious was originally titled Vicious Old Queens, and it stars Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi as a longtime gay partners. I guess they're not technically married in Britain. And it was co-created by Gary Jannetty of Will and Grace fame and another guy who's a playwright whose name I forget. But it is going to be airing on PBS starting in 2014. So everyone look out for that. I may have flown to England and watched it.
And what airline was it?
Through Methods Airlines.
Oh, okay.
And it's very funny. It's a multicam sitcom, in so it's like it has that kind of like Golden Girls-y, Catskills-y energy. It's not like super sophisticated, but it's like loaded with really funny, solid jokes.
Nice.
So look out for that, Vicious.
And who has our loser of the week?
I have our loser of the week. Our loser of the week is Jennifer Love Hewitt, whose show, The Client List, somehow wasn't already canceled, so it got canceled this week.
I watched it.
I watched that show exclusively through Subway advertisements, so I will be that will be a loss to me when I return to commuting to work later this week.
The show is gone, but her boobs remain, I assume.
They sure do.
They're probably even bigger now because she's pregnant.
Something else soon.
And her collection of two long sleeves.
Yeah, hair, fingernail, and Jennifer Love's boobs are the three things that keep on growing after you die. All right, it's time for Smooth Joey Apollo's Fall TV Deadpool update. Because some clues were riding on the outcome of the Fall Pool Deadpool, it's time to check in. And what timing, Joe? What timing?
As if they wanted to give me a good send-off gift. Thank you, ABC.
So let's remind everybody what your three picks were, Joe.
My three picks were... Back in the Game.
Canceled
just this past week. What the hell were my other two?
Lucky
picks?
Seven.
Canceled.
First cancellation
which we've all
of the season.
Obviously already forgotten about.
And We Are Men was
canceled.
And We Are Men, which I actually had to watch that pilot for punishment, I guess. Yeah. So, Bing Bang Boom. All three shows now are officially no more.
So
remind us what he wins.
So Joe wins. This is very exciting. Joe wins 4 game time hints that he can use to get extra information during game time. And speaking of game time, I have a question. Do you know what time it is?
Time for 4 hint game time?
It's game time.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be really mad when you find out what happens to the hints. Oh, shit. All right, everybody. Here this is the 11th game time of the season. It is all tied up at the top, Joe and Tara, with 4 points each. Remember, we had a couple non-regulation game times during Joe's absence. Since this is the last game time before Joe moves over to the guest column, we will end the season today. If Sarah wins game time, the season winner will be declared on points. So second place could become very important in this game time.
Okay.
Oh my.
Yes.
If Sarah wins, we'll also be sucked through a hole in space and time. So let's not worry about that right now.
Sarah, you got to have the eye of the tiger.
So to remind everybody about the hint situation and the tally, Joe has 4 hints now. Tara still has 4 hints left. But none of it matters because there's no hints in this game. That's right. Hints are moot. And why are hints moot, you ask?
I bet I know.
I asked Joe what game time format he would like for his send-off episode. And he said, like somebody ordering steak and lobster when somebody else is buying, that he would like to play extra hot, great match game.
Yeah.
So, sweet. With the generous help of the volunteers at Extra Hot Great Assist on Twitter, that's EHG Assist, we have assembled a 10-question match game. Here is how it works. Let's get a little music in here, shall we?
Yeah, buddy.
I am going to read a sentence with a blank in it. Here's an example. Are you ready?
Yes.
Chris on Homeland is so stupid, he thought Al-Qaeda was a blank. Our 7-person panel is going to write down their answers while you write down yours. The goal is to match what you think is going to be the most common answer, because you're going to get 1 point for every match. Ooh. Everybody plays every round.
All right.
Right?
Are we going to meet our panelists?
We are going to meet our panelists. Secret styles? Indeed. Okay, let's get rid of that music. Let's meet the panel. From New York City, he loves Muppets, he loves baking and theater, and he loves the TV show Slings and Arrows and hates everything else. It's Adam Grossword. Also from New York City, the man who gave the world the phrase, don't fuck it up, it's Dan Blau-Rogie with special assistance from from Eric Drive Angry Rogie. Nice. And our third chair from NPR's Monkey See and the Pop Culture Happy Hour, friend of the show and former Joe Reed roommate, Linda Holmes.
Yay!
Film producer, recapper, and previously TV site contributor and national competitive bridge bigwig, John Ramos, a.k.a. Couch Baron, is here.
Woohoo! Nice.
And we're going to let our next panelists introduce themselves.
Hey, y'all, this is Esther Hancock McKechnie, proudly retired second grade teacher from Bulls Gap Elementary School in Bulls Gap, Tennessee. And I want y'all to know that when he was in second grade, I had little Mark Blankenship in my class. Yes, I did. And he was pretty smart. He always read his books and such, but he also sometimes yelled like a girl.
All right, thanks, Esther. Our sixth panelist, Nick Reinwell Jones, fresh off putting the final edits on his short film, The Spy Who Came to Brunch, is here, and he's full of beans. And finally, let's welcome Pamela Ribbon, a.k.a. Pammy, a.k.a. May Q Holler, a.k.a. Kamala Pibben, a.k.a. Samuel Clipper.
Jesus.
All right, everybody. So that is our panelist. So you have 7 possible points on each of these 10 questions. Again, you're going to write down the answer you think is going to match the most panelists' answer for each question. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Obviously, each question is about a different TV show being extra hot, great. So let's get into it. I'm going to grab my very long, thin microphone on top of my thing. All right, here we go.
Okay.
This weekend wedding is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the blank. Ted just met the blank. All right, everybody, think of your answers. Whoops. Let's get that music back, guys.
Time.
Yay! This wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the blank. All right. So, Let's hear what everybody wrote down. Tara?
I said Ted just met the Grim Reaper.
All right. Joe?
I said Ted just met the grandmother.
Yeah.
And Sarah?
I went with Ted just met Rip Van Winkle.
All right. Let's hear the answers.
This wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the fate we must all meet someday, death. I think Tara had a post a couple of years ago about how she really wanted that to happen sooner, too.
I get a point for that?
You do get a point.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Adam Grossworth. Let's move on to Dan Rogie.
This wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met his maker.
Oh.
Nice.
Another point for Tara. Linda Holmes.
This wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the grandmother.
No! Yeah! Yeah!
This is not really making any sense, but neither does the
No, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
John Ramos, your answer, please.
Hi, everyone. It's so nice to be here, although Match Game will never be the same with Joe leaving. We're all drinking in your honor, Joe. Mostly that. Now, I stopped watching How I Met Your Mother back in season 24, so I'm not surprised this wedding weekend is taking so long. But I said, instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the, who cares about anything to do with Ted? Sorry, this is one reason I stopped. I was yelling this several times an episode and really hurting my voice.
All right, I don't think we had any matches on that one. All right, on to Esther.
How I Met Your Mother. You know, that reminds me of the time I met little Sarah's mother. Yes, honey, when she was in my class in second grade, she used to get in the awfulest fights, and I have never heard such cussing on a lady. So I had to call her mother in there, and you know what? Her mother just looked at me and said, honey, we have tried. We can't fix it. We've prayed on it. We can't do one thing about it. So I just said, all right, we're going to let her go on to third grade, and I don't have to deal with it.
True story.
Oh, that's how they do sometimes in Bull's Gap. Anyway, this wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the divorce lawyer.
Oh, nice.
It's the lawyer that makes it art.
All right, next.
This wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met Jason Siegel's agent, who begged him to finish the goddamn show already.
And our final answer from Pam.
Hey, guys, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Yeah, let me just sit down. Oh, I'm sitting on my giant caftan. Let me arrange that. I'm so glad you can smoke in the studio. I love the 70s. What are we doing? What's happening here? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. How I Met Your Mother. That's right. Oh, I love weddings. You know, that's why I keep having them. Okay, what did I write here? All right, this wedding weekend is too long. Instead of meeting the mother, Ted just met the muff. Ted just met the moth.
Got it.
That's right. You spell it M-O-T-H. Here we go. Genius, right?
Hands up. Who didn't hear moth the first time?
I heard something else.
All right. So that was our first question. And how? What's our...
What Tara heard.
Tara got two?
I had two. Joe had one.
All right. So question number two.
Yes.
Will can't stop thinking about Alicia from The Good Wife. So he filed her briefs blank. Will can't stop thinking about Alicia from The Good Wife. So he filed her briefs blank. All right. Will can't stop thinking about Alicia from The Good Wife. So he filed her briefs blank. Joe.
All right. I said he filed her briefs under O for off.
Sarah.
I said he filed her briefs under where. Under where.
And Tara.
I said for continuance because I couldn't think of anything.
All right. Let's hear what our panelists said. Adam Grossworth.
Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her briefs in with his DVD of Threesome.
That's kind of dirty. I like Josh it. Charles.
And Dan Rogie.
Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her briefs and got some civil action.
Nice.
Of course he did.
That's kind of dirty. I like it.
All right, Linda, we get it. Okay. All right, John Ramos.
Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her briefs in his underwear drawer. It seems logical.
I would say that counts. Underwear.
What's that?
Isn't that what Sarah said?
Yeah. Underwear?
Yeah.
Underwear.
Where? Where? In his underwear drawer? No, I'm not allowing that.
All right. I tried.
Really?
Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her brief under his bed.
Under his bed from Linda Holmes. Esther.
Now, I tell you something about being a good wife. That's that Tara Ariana. Shunny, you, I've always respected you because you have been a good enough wife to work from home so that your husband can get him a good snack whenever he wants you to make one up for him. And they might tell you that ain't feminist, but I say don't listen to them. Do what you want so long as you get to have your little glass of wine from every now and then as well. Now, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her briefs in his underwear drawer. Y'all didn't think I talked about that, but teachers get crazy too sometimes.
All right, Nick.
Not Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her briefs in reverse alphabetical order. I've never watched this show. Wake me up when we get to Nashville.
And Pam.
Good wife. Talking about the good wife. You know who's a good wife? Tara. Yeah, I heard that. Oh, you know where I heard that from? Tara. Will can't stop thinking about Alicia, so he filed her briefs in his dreams. That's what I wrote.
Dreams.
I don't, it's not good. I've never watched The Good Wife. That does not make me better at this or worse at this. It's a weird question. So in his dreams, I'm sure I'm not the only one who wrote that.
All right. So it looks like no points awarded in our second question. I don't think underwear drawer and underwear are.
Yeah, we get it.
Well, you asked. I heard somebody ask if they got the point. So I just wanted. I'm sorry. All right. Number three, Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon blank. Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon blank. All right, everybody. Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon blank. Tara?
I said shrugs because I was going for alliteration.
Ah, interesting choice. Joe?
I said dies.
Okay. And Sorry. Sarah?
Sheldon flunks physics for poets.
All right. Mm. Let's hear from Adam Grossworth.
Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon met the mother from How I Met Your Mother.
Dan?
Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon becomes a brony.
John Ramos?
Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon puts on a Superman costume and leaps a shark in a single bound.
Oh, that was a good one. Number four, Linda.
Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon is played by Ted McGinley.
Mm-hmm. Ted McGinley.
Sure. I see what you did there.
That was a gettable point. I could have got that. Damn it.
Lord, I remember me a Big Bang. You remember this, the little Dave Cole, when you came into my class and you was going to bend down there and show me your new sneakers that had Ninja Turtles on them. And honey, when you popped up from show me them laces, whack, you hit your head right on the side of my big mahogany desk that my husband had brought in there for me. And honey, you just bawled and carried on, and I felt so bad for you. I just reached in there and gave you a little Debbie snack cake to help you feel better. Oh, those were funny times. You know, I never did tell anybody that story. I hope you don't feel embarrassed. Anyway, the Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. They just did an episode where Sheldon banged his knee.
Okay. Big Bang Theory has run out of ideas. So they had ideas at one point. I think you're talking about a different show. Anyway, they just did an episode where Sheldon sits and watches an entire episode of Two Broke Girls and then kills himself.
Does kills himself
count? Does that count for dies?
Yeah, I think it does.
All right.
Congratulations on that point.
I'm taking it.
And Pal.
I heard Dave tried watching The Big Bang Theory, but he turned it off when he realized it wasn't about farting. Okay. What did I write here? I wrote... Oh, yeah. They did an episode where Sheldon discovers himself. Discovers himself. Yeah. They can't all be winners.
All right. So it looks like Joe got the sole point in our third question. Number four. Surprise! New Girl's Winston has been given a new character trait. Now, he blank.
Oh, no. It literally could be anything.
It could be anything.
Surprise! New Girl's Winston has been given a new character trait. Now, he blanks. I sure could go for a Debbie snack cake right now. All right, all our answers are in. We're going to go to Sarah first.
He has amnesia.
Amnesia, Joe.
I said he sings opera.
Sings opera. And Tara.
I said he bakes.
He bakes. Okay, let's hear from the baker, Adam Grossworth.
Surprise, Winston has been given a new character trait. Now he's gay and played by Adam Pally. Oh, rest in peace, Man Donald.
Oh. I'm going to let that one down. Dan Rogie.
Surprise! Winston has been given a new character trait. Now, he's a brony.
Just filing that one away for next round. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have also never watched New Girl, but I understand that one of Winston's many unusual traits is colorblindness. So, surprise, Winston has been given a new character trait. I said now he's moved on to face blindness. And I am sure that wacky hijinks will, as they say, ensue.
Face blindness. Mm-hmm. That was out there. All right, Linda.
Surprise. Winston has been given a new character trait. Now he exists.
Yeah. That'd be new.
I do not know who this new girl is supposed to be, but I want you to know something, that she does not seem to think that her little field trip form needs to get filled out correctly, and I don't care for it, because I'm trying to take all these children down there to look at the fossils down there in the Natural Museum, and I can't get nothing accomplished if I've got one little girl who's going to be in here without help or supervision. So if you see that new girl, you tell her that I'm sick of it and I don't like it. Now, I know I'm retired, but I still go in and help with them classes, and that's the kind of thing that makes me mad. Oh, well, what is all this? His new character trait is that he gives out hugs when anybody wants them. Oh, I'm so mad.
Nick, what do you got for us?
Surprise. Winston has been given a new character trait. Now he is appallingly racist.
And our final answer for this, Pam.
Oh, I was going to do a new girl joke about Sarah Bunting, but I'm a little afraid of her, so I don't like to make fun of her. I think it's solid advice for any of you. Let's see what I wrote here. Oh, I wrote, now he smokes Winston's.
Because
he's Winston, and that they've just given up. So yep. That why not? He smokes Winston's.
Fuck.
All good answers, but... No matches.
No.
No matches. Okay, so we're now at our fifth question, approaching the halfway point in our game. Here we go. Betty White is so bored, now that there's no more off their rockers, she has to blank to feel alive. Betty White is so bored, now that there's no more off their rockers, she has to blank to feel alive. Tara Quick on the draw here in L.A. Tara, Betty White's number one fan.
Actually, there will be more off their rockers. Lifetime picked it up.
Oh, good for
She's
Betty
She's unstoppable.
Phew. All right, let's get our answers from Joe.
All right, I originally said rap, but I'm going to issue that answer. I said go to St. Olaf.
Mm. Ooh,
what's mm-hmm. that?
That's where her character from Golden Ghost was from.
Okay.
Back in St. Olaf.
Tying it back. All right. Sarah.
Watch Golden Palace reruns.
And Tara.
Stage bum fights.
Stage bum fights. All right, let's hear from our panelists. And Adam.
Betty White is so bored now that there's no more Off the Rockers, she has to stalk and antagonize Tara personally to feel alive.
Dan Rogie.
It feels that way.
Betty White is so bored, now there's no more Off Their Rockers, she has to personally go to Tara's house and bug the shit out of her.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Opportunity at our
Seriously.
Opportunity lost.
Damn it.
Mr. Ramos?
Well, I know Tara especially is going to love this mental image, but Betty White is so bored now that there's no more Off Your Rockers, she has to twerk to feel alive. Oh, it's not my fault.
John.
Blame Miley.
Linda Holmes.
Okay. Betty White is so bored now that there's no more Off Their Rockers, she has to rap.
No!
God damn it.
Man.
God damn it.
Oh, man.
Missed opportunity.
That was a tough one, Joe. That was tough to hear.
That was hard to hear.
It was tough to hear you say it and retract it, and it was tough to hear that answer from Linda. Oh, dear.
Now, y'all have named an angel with Miss Betty White. That woman has inspired me and all of my friends because she is as resilient as American dollars or pantyhose in the cold. She just never stops, and I have always loved her for that. And so Betty White is so bored. Now that there's no more Off Their Rockers, she has to pretend to be Sophia Petrillo to feel alive.
Nick Reinwell Jones, your answer, please.
Betty White is so bored, now that there's no more Off Their Rockers, she has to appear on every other media outlet in the world every hour of every day to feel alive.
I think that counts as staging bum fights.
I think everybody gets a point in that inclusive answer universe, Tara. All right, and from Pam.
Betty White. She's appeared everywhere. She's appeared everywhere but on Joe's face. At this point on, I'm just a little dirty.
Jesus.
Deal with me. Okay, that's why I wrote.
Damn.
Betty White is so bored, now there's no more off their rockers. She just has to, I wrote, punch old guys in the nuts. That's what I wrote. Punch old
Shockingly
guys in the nuts.
Shockingly close to bum fights.
I'd
she punches
that.
Old guys in the nuts. However you want to punch it. She's punching old dudes. Right in the balls. There you go. I will accept balls. Write it down. Pammy will accept balls.
That's kind of dirty. I like it.
Imagining Betty White on Joe's face.
Oh, no.
Stop. Yeah, that's going to rattle God me damn for the you. Rest of this game.
God damn you,
Good
Sarah.
Good God.
Oh, well, missed opportunity for Tara there, and I thought was the obvious answer on that one.
Well.
And here we go with our sixth question. I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor. But when he walked into Home Depot, he blanked. I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor. But when he walked into Home Depot, he blanked. Looks like all our panelists are done. Just waiting for our contestants to finish up. All right, we're going to go to New York first, to Sarah.
He ran into the buzzsaw.
The buzzsaw, on point. Tara.
Just wanted to say buzzsaw.
He planked.
He planked.
Oh.
And Joe.
He planked.
No.
Oh.
High five.
All right, all answers on point.
Continental high five.
Let's see. What are panelists said? Mr. Adam Grossworth.
Betty White is so bored now that there's no
Oh, come on, Adam. We're on the Veronica Mars question.
she's really bored, Dave.
I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor, but when he walked into Home Depot, he got nailed.
Oh.
That was my second choice.
Mr. Rogie.
I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor, but when he walked into Home Depot, he got adopted by lesbians.
Mr. Ramos?
I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor, but when he walked into Home Depot, he was overwhelmed with emotion. Not that you could really tell.
I see what he did there.
Me too.
Linda.
I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor, but when he walked into Home Depot through a family reunion.
You know, my cousin told me that there's this thing on what's it called? Kick face? Kick you in your face or something. Anyway, that's how they're making this Veronica Mars movie is what I've heard. Now, I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor, but when he walked into Home Depot, he got sawed in half by a buzzsaw.
Thank you. Hey! You're not denying me that point.
The actual same kind of saw. I mean, yes.
Not
come
a circular
on.
Saw.
Come
very
on.
Good.
I think I'll run my underwear through it.
Hey, I went to the bat for you. Don't forget that.
I know. I don't.
I'm not saying the guy who played Duncan on Veronica Mars is a wooden actor, but when he walked into Home Depot, he was offered a job, and he took it because Home Depot has decent health benefits, and he's not getting any younger.
And finally, for this question, Pam.
I'm sorry, I just saw what I wrote. And I'm okay with it. Got turned into a treehouse. It's good.
Is it, though? Is it, though? All right.
Not
so
as good as Buzzsaw.
Sarah's on the board with that point. So can
Tara,
we...
I'm happy you and I are pun happy with our answer there.
I started
so much
to write
than
it.
Mine. I really can't believe no one said planked.
I started to write it and then I regretted it and then time was running out, so I had to go with it.
Yep.
Score break. Sarah has one. Joe and I are tied with two each.
Okay. We have three questions. We have four questions.
I have four slips left.
Four questions. Okay. Here we go. Number 7. The prison workshop on Orange is the New Black is out of tools. Now Piper will have to use blank to restart Alex's spin cycle. The prison workshop on Orange is the New Black is out of tools. Now Piper will have to use blank to restart Alex's spin cycle. Our panelists is writing down their answers, giggling to themselves. It's a good sign. Looks like our contestants are almost done. And we'll start with Tara.
Now Piper will have to use her face to get Alex's
face
spin cycle started.
Oh my. All right, Joe.
I said phantom chickens.
Phantom nice. Chickens. Mm-hmm. Nice. And Sarah Bunting.
I said a vibrator.
A vibrator. Uh-huh. All right. Let's go to our panel, Mr. Grossworth.
The prison workshop is out of tools. Now Piper will have to use the mother from How I Met Your Mother to restart Alex's spin cycle.
Damn it.
I don't even know what that means, you guys. I'm sorry.
The next one better be brony.
Better be brony.
I considered writing that down.
Mr. Dan Rogie, what do you got for us?
The prison workshop is out of tools. Now Piper will have to use her tongue to restart Alex's spin cycle.
Her tongue, so close to her face, but not.
I'd allow it.
I would allow it too.
We
actually.
Will allow it. All right. That was very good. Her tongue.
That's kind of dirty. I like it.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Ramos.
The prison workshop is out of tools, so now Piper will have to use fingers to restart Alex's spin cycle. I said fingers? I had other thoughts, but this is Joe's goodbye, and I wanted to keep it classy for him.
You'd be the only one.
Lindholm.
That horse is so fire.
The prison workshop is out of tools, so now Piper will have to use her fingers.
Oh, two for fingers. Wow, two for fingers, and nobody gross. Answered that one. All right, Esther.
Now I want to ask y'all this. Mr. Joe, do you remember the time that we took that class trip to the prison and you, honey, got lost? Oh, my God, I didn't think I was ever going to find you. And come to find out, you had snuck out there on their little prison track and was chasing a little frog down the way, just hopping, 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 and you was just jumping after it. And, honey, all them prison ladies were just hollering and yelling at you and thought you were so cute, but I about lost my mind. Yes, honey, you about froze me out to death with fear on that. Anyway, that just reminded me that the prison workshop is out of tools, so now Piper will have to use her tongue to restart Alex's spin cycle. I can't be funny on every one of them. That's clearly what the answer is.
Tongue, two on tongue, two fingers. It's a dirty, dirty,
very
dirty crowd. Yeah,
filthy.
That's kind of dirty. I like it.
All right. Nick.
The prison workshop is out of tools. Now Piper will have to use Scientology to restart Alex's spin cycle. Free Laura Papone, you monsters.
Topical.
Yes.
And finally, Pam.
So I don't watch Orange is the New Black is the joke I wrote here. Here it comes. Are you ready? If I wanted to watch Frustrated Lesbians, I'd stage an all-male version of the Children's Hour. I wrote that down to share with you fine people. And maybe two of you thought that was funny, but I cracked myself up. Anyway, the prison workshop is out of tools, so now Piper will have to use good behavior to restart Alex's spin cycle. I wrote good behavior. No, I wrote good behavior. You have to write it with, it is, there's quotes, good behavior.
That's kind of dirty. I like it.
All right. So it looks like Tara got 2 points.
Dang,
could Tara. Be a very crucial 2 points on the Orange is the New Black question. All right. Are we ready for our next one?
Yes.
All right. Really?
Sleepy Hollow's Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is blank." Sleepy Hollow's Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is blank." This is our third to last question. Taking our time with this game time. Looks like our panelist is done. Just waiting for our contestants to finish up, and we're done. Tara.
The only thing headless around here is that brony.
That brony.
You had to do it.
I had nothing.
Joe.
I said the mother on How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, all right. And Sarah.
I went with this mug of ale.
Oh, nice. Ale,
which
nice.
Means nice. Beer. So don't yep. try to screw me out of any points.
So none of us went to the dick place with this answer is what
I
we're
tried.
All saying.
I did too, but I couldn't think of how to get there.
Will your dickless answers rob you of points? Let's find out. Mr. Adam Grossworth.
Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is your dry cleaner." Because he's wearing that old outfit
okay.
from
sure.
colonial times.
Got it, got it, got it.
Yeah.
Dan Rogie.
Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is Congress."
The one time.
Mr. Ramos.
Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is in your pants."
See?
Yeah.
1 point for the
that is what
for
she
the
said.
Dick answers.
Linda Holmes.
Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is the government." That's a terrible answer.
Dang.
The government.
And yet, a frequent
it
answer.
Might have been terrible, but it would have netted the most points by the look of it on this question. Let's go to Esther.
Now this Sleepy Hollow one's got me fired up because I know what the answer is. Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is the damn tea party." And I'm sorry if it makes you mad. I'm sorry if my husband RF don't care for it. But the truth is, it's just right and they're crazy and I don't like it.
So that's three government-related answers for the Sleepy Hollow question. Mr. Nick Reinwell Jones.
Abby looked at Ichabod and said, "The only thing headless around here is... a Banana Republic mannequin. I don't watch this show either. I'm still waiting for Nashville."
Oh, he loves Nashville, guys. All right, Pam.
My sex life.
All right, so let's see. No
Dawson?
Points on this one. No points, but there was an opportunity to snag a couple there.
There sure was, man.
All right, here's our penultimate question.
Oh,
Dracula penultimate. Is back, and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into blank. That's a good question. Thank you for proposing it. Those people at EHG Assist are all right. I will not kill them. Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into blank. All right. I just saw a good answer written down. Panelists are done. Let's move over to our contestants. Joe, what's your answer?
I once again succumbed to punnery. I said he put his money into boo chip stock.
No! Nice.
I like the way you think, Reed. Sarah.
I crossed out blood diamonds.
No. Oh, that's
a good one. And nice. Wrote NBC stock. Because he seems pretty dumb to me.
And Tara.
He's putting all his money in plasma TVs.
Plasma TVs.
Oh, that's the one.
You know, actually, this week discontinued plasma TVs forever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
bad investment.
Dracula doesn't know that. He's a terrible investor.
All right, let's hear from panel. Really, excuse me, Gene. I want to butt in here. Maybe I could host this round only. All right. Let's hear from Mr. Grossworth.
Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into blanuities.
wrong pun.
Oh. Mr. Rogi.
We stayed away from the obvious on this one. Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into a piggy bank made of a real pig.
Sure.
He had a big cue card in his defense.
Yeah.
John Ramos.
Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into tax-free municipal bonds.
Municipal bonds. That's a pretty good one. Linda Holmes.
Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into Invisalign.
Invisalign. Ah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Esther.
Deep cut.
Ooh, Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into new Coke. It's what I heard. I don't know if that's too good of an idea, but I bet I got some stuff out down here in this refrigerator that he can sell if he's going to sell all that mess. How about new Coke and a two-year-old bottle of French's mustard, honey? I think he's got it.
And Nick.
Dracula is back and he's ready to invest. He's putting all his money into accent training.
Accent training. Good answer. And finally, for this question, Pam.
He's putting all his money into Gould.
No.
Into Gould.
Got it.
Oh, okay.
Not
a single Gould chip stock. Yeah, fine.
G-H-O-U-L-D.
Gould.
I should have gone with Boogle.
Boogle. All right, so no points awarded for the Dracula question, which brings us to our very last question. Programming note, I will be answering for Dan Rogi here.
Oh, okay.
An interesting observation I made during the collecting the answers. There is no gay man except for Joe Reed who has watched Battlestar Galactica. See, just all me, made guys. Comment of it. Just you, Joe. Just all me. Right.
So there's no Nashville questions? Poor Nick.
No.
When Battlestar Galactica's Bill Adama looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found blank. When Bill Adama looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found blank.
Oh my God, paralysis.
Our very last question.
God, I'm not happy with this answer whatsoever. Because nobody, oh God, never mind.
And our panelists are pens down. All right, let's move to our contestants. Tara, what is your answer?
The Constitution.
The Constitution was in Laura Roslin's airlock.
She was blowing it out. She was getting rid of it.
Sure. Joe.
Nobody watches the show, including me, but I said he found major crimes in her airlock.
All right. An interesting choice for the last question answer when you're behind.
It's because Mary McDonald's.
Oh, I understand. Okay. I understand.
No, you don't get it.
Sarah. No, I think.
A baby.
Baby. A baby. All right. Well, let's hear from our panelists and let's also get a little message from each of them, shall we?
Joe, the podcast won't be the same without you, but I'm glad you'll now know the pain of wanting to yell out game time answers while listening in public. Super fun and not embarrassing at all.
All right, let's hear your answer, Adam.
When Bill Adama looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found Betty White.
Oh, Betty White. Betty White.
Sort of a good one for the mother, too. Damn it. Mm-hmm.
And Brony.
Mr. Dan Rogi has a message for you, Joe.
Send our love to Joe, even though I can do that in person. And I think you're all great. Yay, extra hot great.
All right, and Dan's proxy answer is baby. I had baby. So nice. That is a point for Sarah Bunting, correct?
Yes.
All right, let's turn it over to Linda Holmes.
Joe, I am so happy for you. Nobody deserves this job more. You have waited patiently for something that is fully and entirely worthy of you. And I hope that you have a wonderful time, and I hope that you're doing great. And I'll miss hearing you on this podcast, but I hope that you will get to go and do incredibly awesome, great things. I know the Atlantic Wire will be a wonderful place for you, and I miss you. And next time you're in DC, come and see me.
Aw.
Thanks, Linda.
And here's Linda's answer.
When Bill Adama looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found cobwebs. That's terrible.
Oh,
that's so mean.
I almost said that.
But that's what I'm saying.
I see where she was going.
That's pretty mean. I like that that's one. Good. All right. Esther, what do you got for us?
Now, before we go, I just want to leave a special message for Joe Reed. And I want you to know that Mark said that being your roommate was pretty damn great. Mm. And he's glad that y'all are still friends. And even though he can't whoop your ass on game time next week, he's going to whoop your ass in his heart. I don't know why y'all want it to be a battle star. Why has everybody got a fight? Couldn't y'all just have like a quilt star or a bridge star or potluck supper star? Oh, I would tune into that. They put that on Home and Garden, I bet, or Discovery. Anyway, when Bill something looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found the president's wig. No, that doesn't make sense. When Bill looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found some old hose.
Some old hose.
Shit.
Congratulations, Joe. Great to hear that you got such a fantastic job at the Atlantic Wire. I hope that means you'll be sitting at a desk with a telegraph machine and a visor. in any case, congratulations and wish you all the best, and thank you.
Thanks, all right, Nick, let's get your Battlestar answer.
When Bill Adama looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, he found that it was full of babies.
Yay!
Babies.
Yeah. All right. John Ramos sent you a message at the top of the show because he's a rebel. So let's get right to Mr. Ramos's answer.
I feel like Sarah may watch even fewer of these shows than I do, so maybe we'll connect here. When Bill Adama looked in Laura Roslin's airlock, I said he found a baby Cylon. Is that a thing?
It is indeed a thing. It's
a Princeton conspiracy.
And let's hear from our last panelist, Mrs. Pam Rebenla.
Joe, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss your voice in my car, on my ride home, and in my ear, in my quiet moments. Faces and places forever. Good luck.
Faces and places.
And be awesome. We love you.
Thanks, Pam.
It's easier when you don't watch the show and you don't know anything about it. That's why I was able to say he found a black hole.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That's kind of dirty. I like it.
All right, let's get a tally here. That was a big round for Bunting.
Yep.
Let's hear the final scores.
Joe has 2, and Sarah and I are tied with 4.
Oh my. Well, I'm going to make a determination here. The winner of today's game time is...
Sarah.
And the winner of our first Mark II Game Time season.
Tara.
Tara.
Nice job, Tara. Try and
you succeed. The best around.
Nothing's ever gonna keep you down. The best around.
Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
Done.
All right. That was excellent. Thank you so much, everybody at EHG Assist on Twitter for helping out with those questions. Thank you, Adam Grossworth, Dan Rogge, Linda Holmes, John Ramos, Mark Blankenship, Nick Reinwell Jones, and Pamela Ribbon. That was excellent. We thank you all. And on a personal note, Joe.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. We're going to see you pretty soon back as a guest, but
and for these four minis that we're about to record.
Yes, that is if you love anticlimactic goodbyes, get ready for this one. No, let's say Joe, it's been great. I know when we started this, there was only one choice for who we needed to have on it, and it was you. Your absence will be felt. Your insights, your game time knowledge, and it won't quite be the same, but we're happy that we're going to have you back as much as we can. And congratulations on your new job and best of luck.
Thank you.
All the best to our dear Joe.
Fully intend to be back often and feeding my game time fix for sure.
Absolutely.
No, thanks you guys. This has been, as I've said frequently, I've adored doing this podcast. So one little sad thing about me getting this job was that I won't be able to do it every day or every week. But
we'll have you back as much as possible.
Try to hoist the team venti.
That's right. Exactly.
It won't quite be the same, but I'll do my best.
All right.
I'll be all by myself here.
That's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Live from Los Angeles and New York, it was our discussion of Saturday Night Live. After that, we recorded our most intimate thoughts and insecurities about the Carrie Diaries before the seventh inning stretching of our TV coverage with a sporty talk about baseball coverage on television. Joe, deep in the pocket of Big Sorkin, brought us the West Wing celestial navigation for canon consideration, and consider it we did, and deny it we did. We crowned winners and losers of the week. Joe was the winner of our fall TV Deadpool, and the champion of our first Mark II Game Time season was Tara. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Tekel on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Respect my ability to assess a bucket.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So long, Silvio.
And Joe Reed.
Later, boners.
Who we won't see next week, but we'll see the rest of you next week. This has been Extra Hot Great.
I will accept balls. Write it down. Pammy will accept balls.